Dear shooter, so you found a box of ammo on sale. You head to the range and suddenly nothing is going right. Can't get a group worth a shit. Stupid gun. Stupid optic. Stupid trigger.
You're a stupid dumbass.
That's right, shooter. Just keep blaming the gun.
It's not about protecting the stupid. It's just, it is what it is.
I don't know if you know this, but I'm a self-identifying llama. And it's because I have a quick temper and I like to spit.
You are not safe, and you are not sacred, and you're both liars.
We're talking about firearms, y'all.
Keep it clean.
I can hide one under there.
One what? I don't want to know.
I look like I got ran over by a paint truck on the way to Sherwin-Williams and then backed over by the short bus.
You know, let's talk about the modern trends in transsexual transitions.
Welcome to the Dear Shooter podcast. Dear Shooter is brought to you by WyoTech, empowerment through self-reliance, and by Lucid Optics, on target, under budget.
You got to stop throwing these crazy intros at me unprepared, because now I'm like, yeah.
Get prepared.
No, you're not. You know exactly where we're headed with this one.
I do. Happy Thursday. And wow, we're talking about some things that have happened in the last few days that I think took all of us by surprise.
I need a drink.
So I think this all came about. We were talking to a guy who was saying that his optic wasn't holding zero, but yet he was testing different ammo. And we all know, like, until you have ammo kind of dialed in to what your rifle likes, it tends to kind of be all over the place.
Well, you typically have your optic and your rifle tuned to a very specific load. Now, that load may be a factory box of ammo that you like, something you have all in the same lot, if you're that level of aware. Some folks aren't. But you want to try a different projectile. You want to try a copper monolithic versus a partition. They all have different characteristics, and they work differently under different pressures and loads. The fact that you're trying different ammo and complaining about your group sizes tells me that there's a big disconnect between physics and this imaginary camp you see on Call of Duty.
Right.
You can't just select a 129 grain 6.5 Creedmoor in an SST and then jump over to a 147 ELDX and expect them to behave the same.
Right.
Wait, I just said that out loud.
You did.
Okay.
But you're absolutely right, and this was a discussion that we got into, and we talk about a lot when we do our long-range classes, is what we're trying to do when we're diagnosing problems, or we're testing ammunition, or we're doing whatever these things are that we're doing that are very technical, is it's isolating variables. Well, you're not isolating your variable when you keep throwing in different lots of ammunition, different types of ammunition, probably, you're exactly right, different weights, different charges, and expecting them all to be in the same hole.
Most rifle makers have a twist rate, and they have a bullet weight range for their caliber that they recommend it for.
Right.
Most folks don't pay attention to that because they don't understand it.
I wouldn't even say don't even understand. They probably don't even know. Twist rate and bullet weights and different types of bullets. You talked about monolithic versus a partition. These are things that the average shooter doesn't even think about. They go out and they buy a box of ammo and it groups 1 minute at 100 yards and they go, cool, good enough.
Well, with a lot of folks at the bench over the past 10 years, a minute-sized group at 100 yards, I would say, is on the average for most folks. That's good stuff.
I agree. I think anything a minute or less, you're right on.
But I will offer 100% of the time, if you change bullet weights and bullet types,
your point of impact is going to shift. You're right. It's physics.
It's physics, and your grouping is going to change.
Right.
your optic and your rifle are tuned to a very specific thing.
Right. So, how do you mitigate that?
A big hammer?
No, I mean, it becomes understanding at that point. It's understanding that, like I said, in the long range classes, when we're diagnosing, we're eliminating as many variables as possible to dial in on an issue.
Now, obviously, you can't get the same lot number of factory ammo your entire life with your gun.
Right.
I don't think lot numbers take you off super far, but if you're zeroing in, it might be a shocker because it's going to be a smidgy off.
Well, in the whole rifle accuracy discussion, you are chasing a moving target of variables. Every time you fire the weapon, you are fouling the barrel even a shade more.
Mm-hmm.
And it will have a round count before it needs to be cleaned. Now, I'm not an advocate of cleaning your rifle before it needs to. And when your group size opens up, typically that's a sign that it needs to. But if you are shooting enough where you are changing ammunition and you're trying different things, you may have fouled that barrel to a point where it's not any ammo's fault anymore. My issue is, as an optics professional, I get the phone call, your optic won't hold zero. And it's nothing to do with the equipment 99.997% of the time.
Well, and I think at a certain point, as a shooter, you become kind of loath to blame the gear. But as we found, and we've talked about this before, the average gun sold in the United States in its lifetime sees 50 rounds or less put through it.
On average, most folks just don't shoot that much. You're right.
And even, you know, we saw the explosion of new gun owners during COVID. And I would be curious to see how many of those gun owners are still shooting or have ever shot the gun that they bought.
And the interesting numbers came out from the NSSF last week. The explosion numbers we saw through COVID, 10,000 to 1 were pistol versus rifle owners.
Yes.
So pistol is a different animal altogether from rifle and what we're talking about. But ammunition does play in a pistol just as much as it plays in any firearm.
Absolutely does. And keeping the same type of ammunition, I've seen differences versus in 9mm, the round nose stuff, full metal jacket versus like the flat nose Winchester stuff.
Wad cutters.
Yeah. Even your defensive ammo is going to act differently. This is something that I advocate all the time is change out, put in new defensive ammo every year in your carry gun. Take that old box and go shoot it up so that you understand how your gun is going to act differently with your defensive ammo versus your practice ammo, because that defensive ammo, typically, it's a heavier bullet and it's a harder charge. It's a higher charge. So your recoil impulse is going to be a lot different.
Well, the physics of it, if it's a harder charge, it's leaving the muzzle faster.
That's right. So, and it's pushing that heavier projectile. It's correct. Going to recoil a lot sharper than it does when you're using your practice ammo.
What kind of a point of impact shift do you see when you change from your range ammo to your self-defense?
At 30 yards, 25, 30 yards, where I typically do a lot of my testing, an inch.
Okay, so it's not dramatic.
It's not dramatic. And in a lot of the defensive distances that we talk about, it's negligible. And when you're shooting under duress in that kind of situation, I don't think the bullet weight and the recoil impulse is going to make a lick of difference.
Well, in the rifle world, I will tell you that if you shoot range ammo, right, and it is a different bullet weight than what you're going to hunt with, I have seen the difference of 4 minutes at 100 yards, which that's substantial.
It absolutely is, and that's why I don't advocate for using different ammo to practice with than you actually shoot in the real world, because especially with a precision rifle or something that you intend to harvest an animal where the shot has to count, you need to know exactly how your rifle behaves every shot. And switching ammo is going to leave you with some confused data.
I'd agree with that completely. On the other side of it, I think there is a method and a process that most folks don't have the commitment to sit down and do from a almost scientific approach, especially with rifle.
I think you're absolutely right. I think most of the time when we take out a new rifle, in new ammunition, we're trying to figure out what it's like, and this is going to lead into, we're going to talk about ladder testing here in a minute. But I think we do. I mean, we go out there, we've got our computers, we've got our range finders, we've got all the trick gadgets, and we're wearing lab coats because that's what this is. It's a scientific experiment to figure out everything that we need to know to develop data for this gun.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'd agree with that completely. So another topic that's related and come across my radar here recently is we had an optic that was getting blamed for not holding a zero. And the old Marines' method of testing this would be to box test it.
Right.
Which, it's an interesting theory. I understand that there may be a disconnect in terminology, but holding a zero and tracking are two completely separate functions.
Right.
They're related as they're in the same portion of the rifle scope. However, if you shoot one hole and then make an adjustment and the next hole doesn't go where you think it should, that's a tracking issue.
Right.
Not necessarily a hold zero issue.
Right.
If it's a concern about it holding zero, consistent ammo, consistent process, and shoot a five-shot group. Mm-hmm. That will tell the story. Two and three shots never will. You can get shithouse lucky on three.
Mm-hmm.
But five will always tell the story.
Right. And it's interesting you bring up box test. We use that in our long-range classes. And we do it specifically for a tracking exercise. And it's all about making sure that when you turn your turret, it is turning the distance that it's supposed to. Because a box test, as long as the shooter's putting it together, a box test will show if like you said, the optic is not tracking properly.
We do that to
most people don't understand calibrating an optic. And that is, number one, you're going to use a barber pole or you're going to use a target that is calibrated in mils or minutes. At a certain distance, you set it there, you put your optic on it, and you make sure that all the lines line up. If that doesn't happen, you know you got a problem.
And that's reticle geometry at that point.
Right, but that's how a way you can find out relatively quickly if your optic has been QC'd and is built correctly, because if it's not, you know, if I put a mil reticle optic on a mil scale target, and the lines are not lining up where they're supposed to, I know I've got a problem. Because then when I go to range targets using that optic, I'm going to be wrong every time.
Yeah, the reticle is being used as a measuring stick. And if they get the measuring stick wrong optically, they're going to get some other pieces of it wrong mechanically.
Right.
There's a methodology of putting this thing together. But from the very base conversation, you have to start with consistent ammo.
Yes. Yes. And it has to be consistent. You were shooting up some ammo. I think you were trying to sight in a rifle, and it was all over the place. And I sat down, I put a chronograph on it, and we looked at it, and I think you had an SD of 57.
Yes.
Now, for those who don't know, what is a decent SD versus the 57?
Well, let's talk about SD to begin with. So the definition of SD is standard deviation, and what that is the average difference in bullet speed, muzzle velocity, from bullet to bullet, okay? Now, a good SD is anything less than 10, 12. Start getting more than that, and it's enough deviation to start causing changes in point of impact. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to be less than, like, 10 feet per second difference from shot to shot.
And a lot of times in factory ammo, you will see SDs north of 15.
Right.
And it's nothing more than it's an automated process, and they're done in bulk. If they're done in bulk on a Friday afternoon when nobody's paying attention and quality controlling the production line, you can have a wild swing.
Yes.
From lot to lot, even.
Right.
And that's where when we talk about lots in bullets, it matters. Buy out, if you can, buy it out of the same lot. And that's not a magic pill of cure-all either. I mean, you have bought some recent ammo, all out of the same batch, all out of the same lot, and then a couple charges out of the same box.
Yep.
Had catastrophic failures.
Catastrophic to the point that I have to completely rebuild a couple of rifles.
Ouch.
They detonated. And, it of course, the first thing, you know, I'm trying to come up with every explanation as to why this happened. Okay, did somehow 300 blackout squirrel its way in? You know, what was there a squib that I didn't catch? And when it happened to the first rifle, it was like, whoa, this is a one in a million thing. What the heck happened here? And I could not determine what it was. So within 10 rounds, we detonated a second one out of the same box of ammo.
And you have quarantined that box of ammo.
I have. And what I'm going to do now is go through and start weighing each piece of ammo and see if, because the only thing that I can figure out is there was an overpressure, there was an overcharge somewhere. My guess is it was a compressed load, it was overcrimped, and it caused the case to just explode.
Well, in a hunting rifle cartridge, from a reloading perspective, if you spill your powder and don't get a full charge, and then there's a low charge threshold where you can have a pipe bomb, those pressures are just as dangerous as the high-pressure ones because they're out of spec.
Right.
So you have to be careful reloading as well. I was, you know, just about to advocate for if you don't put the powder in yourself, you really don't know. But on the other side of it, you have to have quality control in your own process as well.
Well, agreed. And I've had that as well. I was shooting, it was a class. But, of course, it was the last day of class, and we were doing a match, and everything was under time. And very first time in my life, I had a squib.
And like a bona fide stuck-in-the-barrel squib.
Stuck-in-the-barrel squib. I put the round in the chamber, I pressed the trigger, and it just didn't. Like, the recoil wasn't there. It didn't feel right. Something wasn't right. I worked the bolt. I see an empty cartridge come out, but I knew there was not enough powder to send a bullet down the barrel. So I throw my gun off to the side. I looked at my spotter, said, "Is yours ready to go?" Yes. I grabbed his gun, finished the stage. It was indeed a squib. We got a cleaning rod, cleared the squib, and went right back to work. But you have to be aware of what's going on, because I could have very easily just racked in another shell and pressed the trigger, and I would have been in trouble.
Oh, with that cartridge, absolutely you'd have been in trouble.
Yeah.
Now, the gun's a pretty simple machine. You load a cartridge in the pipe. It builds pressure, spits the cartridge out the pipe. We'll spit the bullet out the pipe. It's going to do exactly what you ask it to do within reason every time. It doesn't have AI. It's not going to change its mind on you. And rifle scopes don't either. They are not going to just all of a sudden choose a different path.
Right.
Consistency in ammo is one of the highest likely things. Or something loose in your equation, whether it is recoil lug or a suppressor that's loose.
Yep.
A thread protector that's loose. All those things can cause inherent undiagnosable issues.
Well, and one of the things that I've seen, especially, you know, I see these guys, and they've got older hunting rifles. They've had it since the 70s, the old wood stock, and it sits upright in a gun safe. But over time, that stock may warp, and now you're putting pressures on your barrel.
Oh, good point.
And that will cause some major issues over
time. It sure
time.
Can.
Because you put your rifle away, and you probably don't even look at it until next hunting season. Then you go and pull it out, sight it in, and because of moisture, time, settling, whatever it may be, now your stock is putting pressure on your barrel, and you're throwing rounds, and you can't figure out why. Mm-hmm. Check that.
Take a dollar bill, slide it around the barrel.
Yep.
You should be able to slide it all the way to the action.
Yes.
It doesn't need to be free-floated by a bunch.
No.
I mean, enough space where it just doesn't have contact, and you should be good.
Right. Yeah. Because barrel harmonics, there's what we call barrel whip, and it's a harmonic that as the projectile's going down the barrel, it creates a motion. And anything that disturbs that motion is going to throw off your shot. That was one of the biggest enhancements in AR technology, was now we don't have that front sight post that is actually putting pressure on our barrel because of the handguard. Having free-floated barrels in an AR, I think, was a huge advance in accuracy.
I would agree with that. That still has a challenge for me with the gas tube.
Yes.
There is still that connection that does make it back to the receiver, and it doesn't always fit in the gas tube hole in the receiver without contact.
Right.
So for me, it still has the potential to be an issue, but I am awful piano box when it comes to my rifle accuracy.
I know you are.
Like, to the point of Rain Man counting tic-tacs on the floor kind of piano box. I know that about me, and it's a sickness. I embrace it. It's fine. But over that process of becoming that geek, I have recognized that there are 9 billion other things outside equipment that can cause this. My mechanics, my breathing, my anxiety level. If I start to have a bad day, my bad day gets worse.
Yes.
Swapping equipment is not going to change my bad day.
No.
I am the problem.
And I'm glad you said that, because as long as you've been shooting and as many rounds as you have put down range, when you go out to the range and there is the problem, typically what's the first thing you blame? What's the first thing that you look for as the problem?
I check all the easy mechanical things I can to see if I was just a dumbass and didn't tighten the suppressor down, if I grabbed the right box of ammo. I look at the brass that I've spent that I didn't quite like and see if there's any signs of pressure that wasn't on a previous piece of brass. That would have meant I was a dumbass and my loaded. I very rarely shoot factory anymore. But that's just an extension of the sickness.
Right.
But after I go through the easy mechanical stuff, I have a hard conversation with myself about, all right, where's your headspace?
Right.
Do you belong on this range today? And there are days that I don't belong at the bench.
I agree, but let me address that real quick. I think that when you have a bad day at the range, I think that, and I used to be with you. There were times it was like, nope, this is not my day, and I would walk away. And I've since changed that attitude, and my reason for that is, you know, if I may be in a situation where I have to deliver and I don't get to have a bad day. So if I go out there and things aren't working right, I got to work through it.
To a relative extent, you have to be self-aware enough to be able to work on yourself in a spot moment.
Right.
Which most folks, including myself, I struggle with that.
I think everybody does. I struggle with that. But I feel that sometimes you have to work through it, because when the moment comes that you have to deliver, it may not be that perfect range day.
If that moment comes, and you're talking about a defensive moment.
Well, defensive, hunting.
Sure.
You know, anything, even competition. I've gone out and shot matches, and it's like, man, I shouldn't even be behind a gun today. But I still got to work through it, because I still got to shoot this competition.
Fair enough. I was just saying, in defensive and hunting situation, if there's lead in the air, I've got a chance.
Oh,
I will work through that situation, and it might be with a curtain of bullets.
Accuracy through volume?
Yeah, but I'll get her done.
On and out, let's pay some bills, and we will be right back.
The 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirit Company, based in Vail, Colorado, high up in the Rocky Mountains. 10th Mountain is a tribute company to the legendary 10th Mountain Division, maker of fine spirits including bourbon, rye, and vodka, as well as being a generous supporter of the shooting sports and veterans charities. Support those that support us, and to make it easier, 10th Mountain is offering our listeners a discount. Just enter Dear Shooter at checkout for 10% off. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. Whiskey worth fighting for.
All right, so we're talking about ammo loads and things that go wrong and variables. You know, one of the ways that we eliminate variables and test our ammo is to do a ladder test. Now, explain to us what a ladder test is.
So, typically, when I ladder test, I know I've got a proven rifle and a proven piece of gear. My mounts are good. My optic's good. In theory, my mechanics and technique is sufficient. I wouldn't call it perfect, because I hate that word. But in the reloading world, I am now refining my zero and my equipment to the point where I am adjusting the seating depth of my bullet and the powder charge of my bullet within the same bullet weight and type.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause some rifles, just the way that they're cut from either button rifling or hammer forged or however you want to look at it, they like a certain specific mix of contact and pressures. So in bullet seating depth, I'll go 100 thousandths at a time and change the seating depth till I touch the lands. If you go too deep into the lands, your barrel will hold on to your projectile. And if you happen to open the bolt before you fire the trigger, it pulls the projectile out. That's too deep.
Right.
Right. Some rifles like a little jump. And you have to find that measure of jump that it likes. Now, typically, seating depth is followed. It actually follows powder testing.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my process of ladder testing, I will make 5 rounds in a increasing 2/10 of a grain
mm-hmm.
powder charge per batch.
Right. So you're going to make 5 rounds all the same, mm-hmm. and then the next 5 rounds are going to be 2 grains of powder different.
Yep. Typically, I creep up to within 10% of Sammy spec. I'm not a super fan of high pressure at the max rounds.
Right.
I think it puts undue wear on everything in the system, including the shooter. But I'll start back, 3 grains, and in 2/10, I'll work up till I find the one where the groupings almost touch.
Right.
That is the bullet and charge and seating depth that my rifle likes, and it will eat nothing else for the rest of its life.
Right. Now, when you do a ladder test, how do you do one for powder and then another for bullet weight?
When I'm doing a ladder test, I usually have already selected my bullet weight.
How do you get there?
So I will load a 130 grain and a mid-range powder charge. And if my gun doesn't like that one, I will load the 140 grain. Right? I'm talking about 6.5 Creedmoor, for example.
Right.
If it doesn't like that, I'll go to the 143s. If it doesn't like that, I'll go to the 147s. Usually, in the middle ground, 140, 143s is where it likes it the most. So I've already established the bullet I'm shooting.
Okay.
Right? And I know that if it's going to be a match gun, I can get away with match bullets.
Mm-hmm.
Where the methodology comes off the tracks is if it's going to be a hunting gun, you have to have something that doesn't have a thin jacket and that can be actually used, has enough sectional density to perform on soft tissue.
Right.
I have shot animals by mistake with match bullets before, and they do not perform well.
No, they don't.
The animal still is in fatal condition usually, but it's not a good thing. Don't do it. I'm not an advocate of it. If you're going to hunt with a rifle, shoot a hunting bullet.
Right.
So once I've selected my bullet and my groupings are minute and a quarter, that's not good enough for me. My rifles don't stay in my cabinet if they don't shoot half minute. Which is, I think, is the consistent threshold for my ability.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll start playing with the powders and the seating depth. But you do them in 5-round increments, and you record the data to find out what your chronograph data is saying, where your SDs are, mm-hmm. because it very well may like that powder charge and that bullet seating depth. But if your powder charge isn't consistent enough and you have SDs north of 10, your ammo is not consistent enough to produce a consistent group.
Right.
So it's not you, it's the bullet.
Well, I'd like to add on the ladder test, when you shoot the first five and make your notes, let the gun cool down. Don't go right into the next five.
That's a really good methodology on a lightweight barrel, on a Magnum cartridge, something in the PRC range or the Win Mag range. Those are hot cartridges, and they tend to heat up a barrel really, really fast. Five rounds is a good threshold to let it cool. If it took you 20 minutes to shoot those five rounds, you should take 20 minutes to 30 minutes off. Get some water, hang out, help a buddy, whatever. But give that barrel a chance to cool down. And this is more important in a hunting rifle than it is a match rifle. Match rifles are meant to be shot round after round after round. They're meant to be shot hot. You'll see them with heavier barrel profiles and deeper, more exotic flutings, longer barrels in length. All of this helps the metallurgy absorb the heat and dissipate it, right? In a hunting rifle, you've bought this to balance out the precision, accuracy, lethality, and carryability. That leads you to a pencil-type barrel.
Right.
Heating one of those up, I have seen Christensen Arms, fantastic rifles, but after the third shot, they are a train wreck because the barrel is so hot, it's not going to be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the round. It's not the shooter. It's the actual barrel because it's so thin.
Well, and even in the match rounds, and we deal with this in our long-range classes, we talk about it and actually show it in action, is we talk about the cold bore shot, because we've seen point of impact shifts northward of 3/4 of an inch at 100 yards from a cold to a hot barrel. Mm-hmm. And while that 3/4 will remain consistent once the barrel is heated up, your first 1, 2, 3 rounds are going to be low.
So what about those, I don't know if there's any competitors out there that don't reload, but your factory, do you still ladder test a factory?
I will consistent test a factory. You don't have the ability to really ladder test a factory.
Is it possible your gun would like one factory over another?
Absolutely, yes.
So you're talking about, you know, buying several different types of, you know, maybe 3 or 4 different manufacturers of ammunition and seeing which one your gun likes.
Yes, because they all have different recipes.
Yes.
And then, of course, you need the weight of the bullet is still a thing.
It has to be a consistent weight bullet for sure. And that methodology, you're consistency testing, not ladder testing. You're finding the manufacturer mix that your rifle likes, right, between Winchester or Fusion or Federal or whatever it ends up being.
And then when you go to a competition and you purchase said, you would like them all in the same lot.
Yes, because that means they're run on the same shift typically, and typically by the same ammo plant operator, which has his own quality control processes versus the guy that comes in on the late shift, right? So your consistency testing. I don't know that I could call it ladder testing between ammo, but you're finding which one, and there is definitely a difference. And it's more prevalent from the rimfire stage. I have a stack of 22 rifles, right? Some are match guns, some are plinking guns. I have 5 Ruger Precision 22s. I use them for classes. Each one of those rifles, those sons of bitches, eat something differently.
Mm-hmm.
So one of them likes CCI, one of them likes Ely.
Mine likes CCI, the gold box only.
Right. Exactly right. And I've got the same rifle that you do, and it will only eat the wolf. So it presents me a problem because I can't find the wolf readily anymore, right? So that's when you go back to consistency testing your ammo, because your rifle will basically say, I don't like that.
Well, and you have a sponsored shooter coming here real soon.
Mm-hmm.
And his ammo came in. Did you check to see?
I did look at it, and we're going to have a talk.
It looked like he had 2 random boxes and then a case of one, which the case would probably be all the same lot and all the same brand, but there was 2 random boxes thrown in.
Yeah, so he's coming out for an ELR match, the Night Force ELR challenge, and he's bringing a 300 PRC.
Good gun.
Fantastic cartridge.
Love it.
It's very suited to the ELR game.
Yes, it is.
And the ammo that he has either got sponsored or chosen. I'm not sure which way it went. It's a hunting round. It's specifically labeled the hog killer.
Which, you'll do good on the hog stage.
Yeah, I hope so.
But, unless it's at 2,000 yards.
Typically, at that match, the hog is the mover.
Interesting. Well, I will tell you that stereotypically, hunting ammo has a less consistency rating than match ammo. Mm-hmm. That's why they call it match ammo.
That's right.
Right? So already we're starting out of the gate with a variable he can't control. And for the purpose of a match, he has been given or chosen the wrong ammunition for the game. I'm hoping that we can get through that hurdle. And I hope he can understand what we're talking about, because that's going to make the difference on his performance of the match. Right now, he is happy to be here. He is beside himself at the opportunity. I don't get the sense that he's been sponsored much before. And that's all really, really great. And that's the guy I want to help.
That's right.
But there is some methodology discussions we're going to have a talk about, which will echo this podcast very specifically.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing I want to throw out, when you're out there doing this stuff, keep your ammo in the shade. Because
yes.
If you're out there and it's a hot day and your ammo's in the sun, that powder's going to heat up and it will change performance. Now, there are powders out there that are impervious to temperature differences, so you're not going to have that issue, supposedly. Now, bear in mind that while these powders are stable regardless of temperature in the cartridge, that has nothing to do with your environmentals, okay? So a hotter day, you're still going to have a higher point of impact than you are on a colder day.
So you're talking about one of those geeky things called thermodynamics.
Yeah.
And when it comes to ammunition, a 5-degree swing can be a minute shot placement. Mm-hmm. If you put a hot round in a cold bore, it's going to act differently than if you put a cold round in a hot bore. So you're absolutely right. The more you can keep your ammo cool or
at least temperature stable.
Stable, yeah, the better chances you are. Now, you made reference to powders. I have found that all powders are temperature sensitive to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm.
There's a good enough factor there when it comes to it. For me, in my 15 years plus testing from a reloader's perspective, the IMR powders are great powders.
Mm-hmm.
But they are temperature sensitive.
Yes.
And I say that with a lisp very specifically. Because IMR is a great hunting cartridge powder. It's economical.
Mm-hmm.
You can usually find it, but it is sensitive to temperature swings. And your rounds will act differently, even though you've ladder tested them to be right in your rifle 5 rounds at a time.
Right. Well, and that's the other thing, too. It's that consistency thing. But also, remember, okay, I'm going to go out and I'm going to test my hunting rounds, and it's a beautiful 65-degree day, you know, early fall, but I'm going to go late-season elk hunting, and it's 20 below.
Cold bore, you should be no more than 2 minutes difference
should
on the first 2 or 3 shots.
Right.
In most hunting situations, that's within tolerance.
It is. It's
acceptable.
Good enough.
When you have a vitals a little bit size of a dinner plate.
Right.
If you're taking an ethical shot.
I'm going to be pointing this out. They shouldn't shoot. I can't imagine an elk letting you go more than 2 shots. I know across the road here at this little place where they hunt, it sounds like Nom over there. But generally, if you're hunting, you're going to get, maybe if you're suppressed, you'll get 3.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
But you're not going to overheat a barrel.
No.
At 20 below.
No, most of the stuff we've been talking about is range performance where you're sitting down for an extended period of time. And you're right. If you got your data and put it together at 70 degrees and then you went hunting at minus 20, your first round's going to be relatively, but outside that, it is going to have some deviation.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to mitigate that from your experience is to go and shoot it.
Yep.
Take the day before and go proof your rifle. There's nothing wrong with trigger time.
No. No. And at the end of the day, it's the trigger time that produces the shooters that stop blaming the gun.